Syrian rebels have taken control of the nation of Syria. Bashar Assad has fled. U.S. airstrikes have hit ISIS bases in Syria. And Israel has massively destroyed the Syrian army, the navy, and the air force as a result of the collapse of Syria. Serious negotiations are now underway for the hostages in Gaza, the possibility of bringing them home this month. Terror attacks continue in Israel. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion of Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is Friday, December the 13th of the year 2024. And here's the news for the week. The world is definitely changing on us, and this week was profound in the changes that took place. Bashar Assad and his father had ruled Syria for more than 50 years, and he is no longer in Syria, no longer in charge of Syria. The Syrian rebels, realizing that Hezbollah couldn't come to his aid, the Russians were tied up with Ukraine, and the Iranians couldn't come to his aid, suddenly rose up and captured all of the major cities within Syria, including Damascus, and the Syrian army welcomed them in. Bashar Assad had no choice but to, with Hezbollah's help, to spirit him out of the country, and the reports are that he has gone to Russia to flee there. The rebels have rushed down in and take it. Now, the guys that is in charge of that is a terrorist and a terrorist organization. However, since he has captured Damascus, all of a sudden he's appearing to be a statesman and doesn't want to be a terrorist anymore, and is laying claim to trying to defend the Syrian people. Well, that message is starting to resonate in Syria. As a result, refugees from all of the other nations that had been hiding from Bashar Assad are now fleeing back into, I should say, coming back into Syria, not only from Turkey, but from Jordan and the other surrounding nations where they had fled from Bashar Assad earlier. As a result, the U.S. has said, well, if they will renounce terrorism and bring freedom to some of the Syrian people, the U.S. will recognize the new government. So those events that opened the door and the U.S. decided to seize the opportunity, we had had special ops forces in northeastern Syria to keep an eye on ISIS. Well, as a result of the Syrian regime dying and the Syrian army is no longer effective, the U.S. Air Force sent in the B-52s, F-15s, and A-10s, and they hit more than 75 specific ISIS targets that were located there in Syria and basically decimated all the bases for the ISIS people in an effort. That has been the mission of the special ops forces that are setting in Syria to control ISIS. Well, they were able to hit them hard this time. However, there is a little bit of a wrinkle in that for the U.S., and that is that the U.S. has been working cooperatively with the Kurds in northeastern Syria and that area. Turkey doesn't like the Kurds. They consider them a terrorist organization. The Kurds have been running the prisons, and they have more than 1,000 ISIS prisoners in those prisons. The U.S. is working cooperatively with them. However, as a result of all this activity going on, why the Turks decided to start shelling the Kurd positions and attacking the Kurdish soldiers that were guarding those prisons, which is putting in jeopardy holding those ISIS prisoners in those prisons. The U.S. is trying to get Turkey to curb their attacks on the Kurds while everybody is kind of picking on their various enemies that are scattered throughout Syria. Israel also launched massive airstrikes against the Syrian military. Now that there's no government there and they've capitulated, essentially, Israel was successful and went in and destroyed the entire Syrian Navy, destroyed the Navy base, destroyed the Army bases, destroyed Army equipment and missiles and weapons depots, basically destroyed their entire Air Force and their airfields, weapons storage facilities, weapons manufacturing facilities. More than 200 comprehensive strikes were made by Israel into Syria in the course of just 2 days, including hitting some of their chemical weapons areas. Now, they've been cautioned by the other nations to be careful about hitting those chemical weapon depots. What needs to happen is troops need to go in there, seize control of those things, and remove them completely from it. Israel does not want any of that heavy military hardware to go in the hands of any future terrorists that are going to take control of Syria, and doesn't want them to be armed with all of those things that Syria used to have. Israeli troops have entered southern Syria and up on Mount Hermon, and they are holding the corridor, so to speak, to keep anything from coming down toward Israel. France and some other nations are demanding that Israel leave Syria from that area. They're claiming that new UN peacekeepers are going to be moving in there, and I think Israel is going to back away eventually, but right now they need to seize control of the situation and get control of it. Israel is obviously trying to locate and destroy those chemical weapon stockpiles before they turn everything back over to whatever the Syrians are going to do. So let's step back for a moment. As a result of Syria no longer being the nation it was the week ago, this is bad for Iran and Hezbollah. Syria used to be the corridor between Iran and Lebanon. This is where they would move weapons in and out, build weapons, build other things like that. And Syria no longer is cooperating with Iran or with Hezbollah. This is also not good for Russia. Russia had both an air base and a navy base there as a result of Bashar Assad. He's not there anymore. Russia probably is not going to be able to hold on to that. It's good for Turkey and Jordan. As I said, Syrian refugees are able to leave their countries and go back into Syria for it. Turkey has always been interested in some of the stuff going on in Syria. Like to have access again to the Kurdish rebels they've been dealing with, as I previously mentioned. This is another nail in the coffin for Hamas. There are no more supporters for Hamas, not Hezbollah, not Iran, not anybody in the region. They're all alone and they're in trouble. It is a toss-up for Israel. At the moment, we don't know which way Syria is going to go. Will the new rebels be just another brand of terrorism, or will they actually try to build a free Syria and so that there's a civilized society that takes shape again? But Israel is watching very closely and on their guard for fear of what could be taking place. But the bottom line, this is all very, very bad for Iran. Iran built this axis of resistance, these surrounding nations around Israel to oppress Israel. And now their entire entourage of those different countries, different forces have now collapsed. Some are making comment, some in the spiritual community, quoting from Isaiah 17, verse 1. Let me read that verse to you. Isaiah says in that verse, the pronouncement concerning Damascus, behold, Damascus is about to be removed from being a city and will become a fallen ruin. Some are saying, hey, you know, isn't that what's taking place here? Actually, I'm not quite sure that that is the fulfillment of that, because the prophecy there in chapter 7, verse 1 says the city of Damascus is not going to be a city anymore. They still are a city at the moment, but they're having to rebuild. There's no question Syria, the entire country, is in ruins. So that's just a quick comment, prophetic comment on what's going on. It's kind of, to me, wheat and tares. We have some good things that happen. We have some not so good things that happen. And God told us in the last days that we'd have wheat and tares going on at the same time. You would have to say at the moment, bottom line, what has happened to Syria, what's happened to Hamas, what's happened to Hezbollah and Iran. These are good things for Israel. They're at least moving in the right direction for Israel. So we'll classify them as wheat as opposed to weeds. Hamas clearly has been destroyed. They have no leadership and no support, and Gaza is in ruins. They have no base of operation at all. Just small pockets of resistance, still many of them holding hostages down in the tunnels and so forth. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, has always claimed that Israel is committing genocide there in Gaza, charging Netanyahu and other leaders in it. The rest of the world is not agreeing with them, and it is absurd to say that Israel, in defending themselves, was committing genocide either in Hamas or in Lebanon or any other place. The Hezbollah ceasefire is still holding, but I remind everybody it's only a 60-day ceasefire. It extends through the rest of Biden's presidency. The leadership definitely has been destroyed. There is no more support coming from Iran. With the loss of Syria, and both Hezbollah is defenseless as well as Iran. The Syrian air defense system used to prevent Israel from making a straight run at Iran. There is no more Syrian air defense system anymore. That means if Israel wants to go to Iran and bomb and take out their nuclear program, it's a straight shot over to Iran to do it. And that new discussion has popped up this week. Iran has just announced that they are increasing their enrichment program. They're accelerating their nuclear program. I think they've figured out that their missile program is not going to work. Their proxies they had propped up to attack Israel is not going to work. Their last weapon of last choice would be a nuclear device. Israel knows that, and in effect, Iran has been pushed back into a corner, could be even more dangerous than they were before. So Israel is considering the possibility of going over and hitting the nuclear sites in Iran. The military option is now more feasible for them to do it. With the Trump administration coming in and announcing they want to put a massive pressure program into place on Iran with new sanctions, and Trump would like to take out their nuke program, there is the possibility that Trump could pose a military option as a part of his negotiations with Iran, or pose the option, we'll let Israel go over and take you out. It's going to change dramatically, and after Trump is the president, the foreign policy in the Middle East is going to change dramatically, and Israel's going to be right there with their own changes in foreign policy as well. Not to forget, but the Houthi rebels are still operating down in Yemen, and Israel has announced that they are going to turn their full attention on them. So you can expect to hear Israeli airstrikes going down and hitting the Houthi rebels, and if they get hit enough times, I think they'll be folding their tent, just like Hamas, just like Hezbollah, just like Syria. Egypt and Qatar, along with U.S. negotiations, are now meeting in a furious effort to bring about the hostage negotiations. Israel has kind of sweetened the pot a little bit for the negotiators, offering a temporary ceasefire, offering to remove the IDF soldiers from certain key areas. The idea is, and the optimism at the moment, is we could have hostage release and a ceasefire and Hamas getting them released by the end of this month. Trump, of course, has said that if they're not released by January 20th, then there'll be hell to pay. And everybody is taking that as a very serious threat from the new president-elect. And that is also provoking a good response with the hostage negotiations. At the moment, the best word that we can get out of the negotiations are saying we're close to putting together a deal. The parameters of the deal we don't know about, but they're close. So we'll watch that very closely. This is an intense time, as it hasn't been in the previous months. This is a very intense time for the hostage negotiations. In Australia, back more than a week ago, there was a fire at a synagogue. It has now been classified as a terrorist attack by the Australian government. And we talked about earlier about other anti-Semitic acts going against Israel all around the world. In Israel itself, because of the terrorists coming out of the West Bank region and the Palestinian cities that are located there, there's a constant, almost daily, in Israel, car ramming attacks, jabbings. and there was shooting. There was a shooting of a bus this last week, and I believe it was a 12-year-old boy was killed on the bus as a result of the shooting. And all Israel can do is to pursue the terrorists and capture them as they do these acts. Defense Minister Katz has made a public announcement to the IDF that they need to prepare for escalation. The IDF is going to be moving in to the West Bank areas and hopefully to clean out all of the terrorist nests wherever they're at in the West Bank region, in those Palestinian cities. So we, in the next few weeks, we should hear about more activity going on with that. They have got to get them to stop doing random terrorist attacks throughout the land. Part of it has to do with sheer desperation on their part. They're staring into a Trump administration that's coming in that's very pro-Israel. No longer are we talking about the two-state solution. No longer are the terrorists going to be supported. Iran is back on its heels. Hezbollah can't help. Hamas can't help. So those terrorists that are located inside the land of Israel, essentially they're high and dry, and I think they're discouraged, they're depressed, and I think probably this is a last gasp for them, simply striking out and trying to do as much harm as they can before they die. So Netanyahu finally got hauled into court. This has been going on for a couple of years. Charges against Netanyahu for improper relationships, mistrust of the government, and bribery. They finally got him into court. He came into court and he basically, let me kind of explain the background. Why in the world is he being charged? Why in the world are they prosecuting this case? It has to do with Netanyahu has a very good, very wealthy friend who owns some companies, and they did do some business with Israel. And this friend, who's a very good friend of Netanyahu, gave Netanyahu some cigars. And mind you, these aren't just simple cigars. These are pretty good cigars. And so they claim that he was bribed and he was influenced, and so they see it as corruption on his part. And it's just the enemies of Netanyahu that are just looking for anything they can to blame him with. Well, Netanyahu came into the court for the first time. He blasted the court, formally denied all of the charges, and called the entire affair absurd. Now, here in the United States, we've had our own taste of that with the prosecutions for Donald Trump and some of the things he's been charged with and the court cases he's had to deal with. The same kind of situation is going on inside of Israel toward Netanyahu. The judicial reform motions that have been going on in Israel, and this is before the war of more than a year ago, the government of Israel is interested in bringing the judiciary branch of the government, the Supreme Court, the Attorney General, into balance and check and balance with the rest of the government. The judiciary at the moment is set up totally and completely independent. Now, why did that happen? Well, way back when Israel was first being formed, the country was first being formed, this is back in 1948 and 49, when the war of independence was being fought, they didn't have a whole lot of time to sit around and hold a constitutional convention and discuss how they're going to do it. Just things started getting done, and in those days, there was nobody that was doing anything inappropriate toward one another. And as a result of matter of fact, this is the way it was set up, the judiciary became very independent. But in the last 20 years, the judiciary has been doing a whole variety of things against the government, the Knesset and the duly elected government, and being separate from the vote of the people. So the Knesset has been trying to put together reform bills to bring the judiciary into check and balance. And of course, it's caused all kinds of trouble between conservatives and liberals in the nation of Israel. So that situation is starting to bubble up again. These are internal politics within Israel, but it causes lots of frustration for the government and for all of the people that are there. Here in the U.S., for the last week or so, we've been hearing about these drones that are flying over the East Coast, namely New Jersey. in the evening times, more than 180 settings for it. There's some fear and apprehension about it. Is this a foreign intelligence unit? Who and why is doing this? We're reminded of last year when the Chinese balloon floated across the U.S. and was obviously spying. So there's a question about who's spying or is this spying? What's going on? Every time they ask the government about what's going on, who are these people, where are these drones, the government's not really coming up with any serious answers that make any sense. All they're doing is making vague statements about we see no hostile intent and such and such. The photographic evidence that has been captured here recently clearly shows that all of these unidentified flying objects, whatever they are, have anti-collision lights. They have port and starboard lights. They're small winged aircraft. Some of them are manned. But there's no clear voice from the government, either the FAA or the Department of Defense or the FBI or any state government, that can really answer the questions for the public and the press as to what is this and who is this and why is this happening. And everybody's acting like this is a bunch of UFO sightings. Well, the Coast Guard has come in and they finally said, hey, we checked off the coast. There's no mothership out there that's launching drones into the U.S. and coming back. So we know that's not happening. So it all comes down to pure speculation as to what in the world is going on. I would remind everybody that the average citizen, when they look up in the night sky, generally cannot distinguish between an airplane, a drone, a satellite, or a flare in the night sky. The few photographs that are available of this that I have examined look like small business jets that are flying. And on the East Coast, in and around those major cities, there are many executives that fly around in jet airplanes like that. And depending on the direction of the flight, they can look like they're hovering if they're coming right at you or going away. But if they can zip around, and there's a lot of airports in and around there, there might be some drones that are flying there. But some of the bigger objects that have been claimed and so forth, honestly, folks, I think we're going to find out they were private aircraft, and it's just a lot of them that are up there at the time, and most people can't figure out what they're looking at. So I think, and I don't know this for certain, but I think that in the course of the next week, somebody's going to finally come in and they kind of explain what's going on, and then everybody will go, oh, that's what it is. Okay. But at the moment, it doesn't appear to be hostile intent. It doesn't appear to be some special intel program going on at all. Maybe the government's doing something and practicing at night, but they're not revealing. We'll see. We'll see how it pans out. We need to pray for Israel. The world is definitely changing for them to the better, I would say. Definitely pray for the hostages that return. Right now, negotiations are intensive. Would love to see them meet the goal of bringing them home this month. Thank you for viewing our program. Thank you for subscribing to LionelLamb.tv to be a part of our programs on a regular basis, uninterrupted. And as we approach the final holidays of this month, we pray that you and your family will be gathering soon to enjoy one another. In the meantime, Shabbat Shalom.